The Lord's wisdom and blessing is with us, heart dwellers. The title of this message is Your Worst Enemy. And it was interesting, as I entered into worship today, I spent a long time in worship and just was not connecting with the Lord. I know you guys can relate to that. That can be so frustrating. So when I finally knew it was time to stop and listen for the message, even though I didn't feel that usual anointing, I just stopped anyway and listened, and sure enough, he was there. As he taught us in yesterday's teaching, he said, just expect me to be there because I'm there, and it doesn't depend on whether you've been good or bad. I'm still there. So here I am, Lord, and it's been really hard without being able to feel you deeply. You know I cannot live without you from day to day. I know you're here. I've seen and felt you. And I know by faith, but nothing in this world can replace your embrace and the infilling of your spirit in my heart each morning. He answered me and said, can you accept and receive by faith that although you don't feel it, I am nonetheless infusing you with myself? With your help I can, but still it is hard, Lord. Then I had a thought. When he mentioned infusing with himself, I thought, you know, I should receive communion because that's one time when I really feel that infusion of grace. So I did. I had meant to receive communion hours ago during worship and prayer, but I kept forgetting. So I did receive communion and spend some time thanking him for his graces, and he was right there. His chin was on my forehead, and he drew away. He was holding me to his heart, and he drew away, and he began, you see, you've been thinking about everyone else but me this morning. Your mind has drifted to umpteen different places. Lord, I can't control my mind. It's like a runaway car with no brakes, careening down the mountainside with no way to stop, even with a binding prayer. My love, the more you isolate yourself from the concerns of the world, the less your brain will have opportunity to call up images, memories, and the like. Little desires, like little foxes, can also impede your concentration. The less you have to do with the world, the clearer your mind, Claire. It is true, Lord. I've had to find winter boots and a lightweight coat for the mornings here, which are so cold when I go to prayer. That put me shopping on the net for the appropriate item, which is always dangerous because I get an idea in my head and I look till I find it. Avarice, the black panther who stalks me, makes his presence known. For those of you who are new on our channel, I came from a very artistic, inquisitive, and materialistic environment. I was constantly courting beautiful things to the point where the Lord was on the perimeter of my life, not in the center. The best thing that ever happened to me was when we sold everything and went to live in a cabin in the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania. I was never freer, happier, or closer to the Lord in my life. That experience set a precedent that helped me overcome this panther. But he's still alive in my flesh and makes his presence known when I begin to do foolish things for me, like shop. Other souls could do it and lay it down, but not me. And tracing back the source of that panther, I had a dream when I first became a Christian. I was swimming in the lake at our summer house. All of a sudden, a large, muscular black panther came swimming towards me and tried to drown me. I fought him with all my might. He would go under and I would think, he's dead. Then he would come bursting back up out of the water and pull me under. And I would think, I'm going to die. Back and forth we fought. And the dream ended before I could tell who won. I thought I'd made an end to him before I awoke. But could I really be sure? I didn't know what that dream was about at the time. I really had no clue. Then it was revealed to me a demon of avarice was assigned to lure me away from the Lord. And it did, for many years. until the Poconos, but it's still lurking in the shadows. Can any of you relate? Do you have a Black Panther? Maybe it's popularity, power, money, drugs, alcohol, sex, or food. Whatever it is, it pulls you away from Jesus with desires that are fruitless in eternity and could easily lead to damnation. But the thoughts I was barraged with were not so much about shopping. They were more about past failures in my life, foolish mistakes I made that hurt others. Well, we all know who accuses the brethren day and night. But several times in the past few minutes, I keep seeing a man who is rather stocky with a broad forehead and very intense eyes, who appears to be opposing me, sitting squarely opposite me and trying to scramble my thoughts by getting my mind on other things. Lord, is that real or imagined? He answered me, "It's imagined, but a good representation of your fleshly nature. An opponent intent on getting his own way. Yes, it is an embodiment of your flesh. Its stature is stubborn, bullish, squat, and firmly planted in opposition to your spirit, which is like an innocent little child. This is your greatest enemy, Claire. No one can do greater harm to yourself than you. No one. But I thought that perhaps by revealing it to you, what it looks like, you'll understand what we must defeat together." Then the scripture came to mind from Galatians 5. "Walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the flesh desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the flesh. They are in conflict with each other." And here I like the Living Translation. "The sinful nature wants to do evil, which is just the opposite of what the Spirit wants. And the Spirit gives us desires that are the opposite of what the sinful nature desires. These two forces are constantly fighting each other, so you are not free to carry out your good intentions." Well, that's no contest with you on board, Lord. Not so quick, my love, not so quick. Your flesh has been with you since conception, and has a will to survive of its own. It has its own knee-jerk reactions to perceived threats, hunger, cold, violence, criticism. Oh, there's no way to explain to you the power the flesh has over your members. The Spirit has a much different agenda, seeking love and affirmation and a purpose. It's when the two get mixed up, or one overpowers the other, that the trouble begins. There's a constant struggle for supremacy as long as one is not dominated by the other. Once a soul settles into their flesh, well, the battle is over. The flesh is won. From time to time, glimpses of what could have been bubble up into your consciousness, but are quickly put down by the pleasures of the moment and the perceived inconvenience of reaching for your dreams. When a soul is born again, and I'm given complete access to the desire nature, I begin to turn that arrangement upside down. By my spirit, you become aware of something greater than survival and pleasures of the moment. You begin to long for your heavenly homeland and the freedom you will have there. You begin to remember key moments when I presented you with a dream or vision, or even a word of prophecy, and something within stirs. At that point, I begin to take your hand and lift you up from your bed of indifference and failure, lost purposes and impossible dreams. Then the struggle is on. There are some so self-disciplined that this seems a very little issue to them. On the other hand, much of what motivated them before their conversion has to do with the world, power, influence, fame, and glory. Yes, there's still corruption in those who are converted, who seem to show remarkable self-control and accomplishment. There are still things that are there, deep down, almost unrecognizable, that tend to influence their decisions. That too is the flesh. Although it seems not to be carnal, it is just as carnal as gluttony. All of you are still a work under construction. None has arrived. And the moment you perceive that about yourself, I will quickly come to your rescue with a lesson in humility, lest you perish through pride and presumption. It is a very rare soul that immediately puts to death all of their flesh and empties themselves to give me supremacy in their lives. And to this I say, even you who have done this thing still have only me to thank, for I gave you that disposition and grace. In the end, Claire, all have fallen short of the glory and perfection of God. So why did you bring this up, Lord? I want all of you to know that each of you are on the very same rungs of the ladder as the soul next to you. Forget this idea of being ahead of anyone in sanctity. It is a false notion altogether. You see, what gives the appearance of a soul being ahead of others is pure grace. And grace is my possession, not theirs. So were I to remove all that grace, you would fall back to the bottom rung again. Grace allows you to cooperate. Grace strengthens you in perseverance. Grace holds you in place when you would have collapsed or run away. Grace fills you with understanding. Grace instructs you about the outcome of your decisions. And grace moves your conscience to behave in obedience to my known will. Remove grace, and you have nothing of any value left, period. Because then the flesh takes over. Then that squat, determined, self-willed flesh begins to make all your decisions. You see, this perspective is sadly lacking from ministers who are trained in graduate seminaries. They learn to conquer the world, not conquer themselves. I would rather have one raw diamond that's onto his flesh than 10 finely faceted gems that don't have a clue. This is another reason why people are leaving the churches. They are not being taught how to conquer their flesh. In fact, they're being taught how to have the appearance of holiness on the outside without having the capability to conquer their own particular passions. My people, as you rise up to serve me, be particularly careful about the inner man. Know yourself well and rely totally on my all-sufficient grace, or you will fail. If you lift yourself up above others, you are still lacking in understanding. When you see that all that is good comes from my grace, you will walk humbly before me and before men and seek me every day for the way to go and the power to accomplish it. Oh, Lord, forgive me, but I feel like I'm putting these thoughts in my head, not you. Perhaps you feel that way because I'm continually feeding those thoughts to you, Claire. Truly, each day your mind gets filled with more and more of my thinking. That's just natural by association. That's normal. You begin to act and look and think like the one you spend the most time with. Do not fear, Claire. You're not making this up. Look at me. I changed my focus from the computer to him, and his face became ever so clear and tender. He looked so much like Ray Downing's painting of Jesus. So much. His expression was tender and almost plaintive. Are you going to doubt me too? I'm sorry, Lord. I'm my own worst enemy, as you said. He answered and said, well, to your credit, if you didn't test the spirits, you would not be a good example to others. You do have to be careful. But understand, when the gate of virtue has been abandoned, that is when the devils enter. Meekness, humility, awareness of your frailty, and complete dependence on me. Those are the hinges on the gate of virtue that will protect you, even from yourself, the worst adversary. But do not fear. With each new day, as you grow in awareness and obedience, it becomes easier and easier to know without a doubt, I am your source of strength, your one and only source.